This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Have you been in quarantine so long that you have run out of things to watch on Netflix? Coming to your rescue, the Midland Center for the Arts. Its company of actors has launched a weekly project, Shakespeare and Chill Live. That's right, every Friday night at 9, a team of thespians performs a live production of one of Shakespeare's plays over Zoom. All right, so we're going to listen to the Midland Center for the Arts Zoom production of Midsummer Night's Dream. I want you to imagine the actors set against background images of a woodland at night. The actor who's playing the hapless weaver, Bottom, has entered the Zoom meeting with a spell cast upon him, turning him into a donkey. The Midland actor has put a digital donkey head filter over his picture. The actress playing the fairy queen, Titania, has her eyes closed with a digital crown of flowers across her forehead.
This is a knavery of them to make me a fur. I see their knavery. This is to make an ass of me, to frighten me. If they could, but I will not stir from this place. Do what they can. I will walk up and down here, and I will sing that they shall hear. I am not afraid. The woosel cock, so black of hue, with orange tawny bill. The throstle with his note so true. The wren with little quill.
What angel wakes me from my flowery bed? I pray thee, gentle mortal, sing again. Mine ear is much enamored of thy note, so is mine eye enthralled to thy shape, and thy fair virtue perforce doth force me to move me on the first view to say, to swear, I love thee.
Methinks, mistress, you should have little reason for that. And yet, to say the truth, reason and love keep little company together nowadays.
The center is planning to perform all 37 plays in the canon this year. They are a little over halfway through. And Anon, here to tell us more, is Dexter Brigham, director of theater programs at the Midland Center for the Arts. What ho, Dexter?
Hello there. How are you?
I'm getting by. You kicked off the series with a performance of As You Like It. Could you tell us a little bit about how this thing got started?
Yeah. So, the middle of March, all of our programming at Midland Center for the Arts came to a screeching halt. And me and my colleagues on the programming team all came together and said, well, how do we meet our mission of providing meaning and connection to everyone who's kind of within our region? How do we do that if we can't come together in a place? Like, what we do is we come together in theaters and in concert halls. And how do we do that? And at first, I was really skeptical about this idea of live streamed Zoom performances. And then I watched a performance of Two Gentlemen of Verona that was done in a Zoom format by a group called The Show Must Go Online. And I was like, oh, well, that really kind of provides proof of concept for me. Like, that's actually pretty innovative and fun. And so we were thinking, hey, you know, we got a few weeks where we will be creating this type of programming until this whole thing blows over very quickly. Like, of course, it's going to blow over very quickly. So let's do a few of these. And so we settled on presenting As You Like It. You know, there's a character in As You Like It, Jaques, who is known for his melancholy. And as we all settled into our quarantines and
our societal melancholy.
Yes, our societal melancholy, where we all would stay indoors for weeks at a time, only going out to grocery shop and, you know, kind of dealing with that cabin fever. It seemed appropriate. You know, Jaques, you know, most famous speech is the all the world's a stage and the seven stages of man. And, you know, it's kind of like Jaques is like the perfect kind of spirit animal for the melancholy moment that we're in terms of spending a spring and a summer the way we are. So that was a great kind of launching point for us. And then we actually spent a week doing an evening of sonnets. We're like, oh, let's shake it up and do some sonnets, you know, so we did that pretty early on. But then after a few weeks, it became clear that this was going to go on for a while and that there really wasn't any end in sight. And, you know, we really started to be worried. I mean, we're still worried as an arts organization that what we do can't be done for quite a while. But we took a look at the Shakespeare and Chill Live program. We said, you know what? This is exactly what we should be doing. You know, we have artists that we're engaging every single week. We have new artists that are coming in. At this point, we're coming up on almost 100 actors who have engaged in the program. We also have anywhere from 2,000 to 7,000 audience members who watch our videos each week.
I think it's safe to say that the thing that works about this is when the cast is just leaning in just enough to the artifice of what's going on, that this is an online performance. It's not a staged play. What kinds of things have you been telling people about how they might alter their performance as they're in their homes doing these lines?
So every single week, every Thursday night, we have a first table read and technical rehearsal and dress rehearsal all at the same time. We have exactly one rehearsal each week. And I spend like about the first 20, 30 minutes of that rehearsal kind of talking all the new folks through the medium. Because part of this has been just the fun of exploring the medium. And one of the things that we've learned is that I call it the GoPro style of performance. You know, we don't try to actually have our actors, you know, turn to someone else who's in a different Brady Bunch box and try to create the illusion that they're talking to each other. When audiences are watching on screens, I think they're very aware of the fact that we're all in boxes. So instead, we go for the GoPro approach, where everyone is interacting directly with their webcam, and we pass props back and forth between our homes. We make sure that we have matching props, and we do all of our fight scenes. But the main thing that we realized was that there are limitations. An audience needs to be in the same place at the same time with a group of actors in order to weave that spell of imagination that we associate with live theater. And when you're sitting in bed with a drink in your hand and you're watching some people on a screen who are all look like the opening scroll of Brady Bunch, there's limitations to that. And so what we decided to do is that our two main goals are, number one, to engage with the language and to allow anyone who's performing or who is watching to really enjoy the beauty of the language and the rhythm and the poetry. And then number two, to just surprise people. We've created an environment where we just say yes to pretty much everything. And I tell people, you know, you guys are pulling these things from your closets and from your refrigerators. Props are just coming from, it's crazy, right? Everything is just kind of nuts. And so we decide on a theme for the week, a concept for the approach. And people will check in on with me about certain ideas. But for the most part, I say, unless it's something that's really far out there, and even sometimes if it is really far out there, I encourage them to do it. So there's an improvisational element to our weekly performances, where during the shows, both the actors and the audience are seeing a lot of these costumes and a lot of these choices that the actors are making for the first time. And so, you know, between the language and then constantly being surprised by somebody entering with a new, completely outlandish costume, or we have sword fights with lightsabers, or we've had a sword be a giant cucumber. Batman has made an appearance. There's been a puppet show. We've had a terrifying clown make an appearance. That kind of like surprise and delight dynamic of just constantly kind of shocking and delighting our audience and trying to see how we can surprise them each week. That's kind of part of the fun of it.
I like the cucumber sword adaptation a lot. Is there another weirdest prop nominee that you'd like to share with us?
I would say that it's Shakespeare. So naturally we go through all of the goriest of tragedies. You know, so we've gone through Titus Andronicus and King Lear. You know, some of the things that people have come up with for the severed heads, you know, I think we've had like small little baby doll heads. We've had sports balls with faces driven on them. In Titus Andronicus, we had a character who, you know, she has her hands cut off and her tongue cut out. Our actor had red mittens on her hands and she filled her mouth with like red syrup, did a fabulous job of not speaking for the entire scene until the moment that she opened her mouth. And then she opened her mouth and it all just poured out of her mouth and died. It was quite effective. It was really, really wonderful.
Best Lavinia ever.
Yes.
Dexter, Shakespeare lived hundreds of years ago, but this man knew something about writing during a plague. The bubonic plague was ravaging England, I want to say, most of his life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think from the online feedback that you're getting that there's anything that's resonated in the highly unusual moment that everyone's living through so far?
Definitely, especially among the artists. I think this project has really served to clear away the static, the 400 years of static between us and this guy who lived 400 years ago, who who had all of the same love of theater and was doing a lot of the same things that we are. You have this guy who, you know, moved to the big city when he was a young man, and him and his closest friend started a little theater company together. They managed to get a grant from the government. You know, so they were basically a nonprofit theater. And here's this guy who's trying to just write hits. He's trying to write things that are funny and dirty and have big action scenes and, you know, that just catering to his audience, something that's going to sell, while also trying to, at the same time, to create high art. And it's easy to feel disconnected from Shakespeare, to have him feel like he's very far away, rather than being somebody who's exactly like all of our playwright friends or all of our artist friends. And by doing the plays every week, both our artists and our audiences really get a sense of the similarities in these plays, that Shakespeare was writing for a group of men that he knew. And so you begin to see the consistency. You know, here he's writing for Conning, and then here he's writing for Hemings. Mm-hmm. She's writing for these specific men, and you start seeing these, you know, the character consistencies, you know, like that Helena and Hermia are these two young men. You have one who's tall and fair-haired and is fabulous with language and witty, and you have one who's short and dark-haired, who's really strikingly beautiful. And then you see those types, those archetypes of actors that have those skills popping up in every single show. You have the same thing with Beatrice and Hero in Much Ado About Nothing. And it's really wonderful to clear away all of that baggage and see the inner workings of this theater company that was struggling to make a living 400 years ago. As we keep doing the research on each one of the weekly plays, it pops up every so often. Well, you know, this series of plays, everyone believes that this was when the theaters were closed in 1591 for 6 months because there was a big wave of plague hitting London. It's kind of neat to get those little pieces of insight.
Wow. We should say, anyone hearing this right now from Midland or anyone who's driven through Midland right now, your community has been through a few things lately. As if the pandemic weren't enough and the serious consequences it's had for creative people and people who love art and who love theater, can you give me an idea of what things would be like at the center right now if there were not a pandemic?
Well, yeah. Oh, my gosh. So we had so much lined up for the spring. The national tour of Cats coming through. We had a big community production of A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. We had a symphony concert, like the big finale for our symphony season that was planned. We had a whole summer of summer camps. You know, usually we have hundreds and hundreds of children in our building every day attending dozens of summer camps in June, July, and August. And all of those had to be canceled, both for the pandemic, but also because the Center for the Arts, we suffered about $9 million of damage to our facilities during the flooding.
I think most people know that there was dam failure at two dams in a tri-county region, and the damage can be seen to this day, and it's really serious. What has happened to programming? Was it just a situation where you had to cancel absolutely everything?
Well, we have been very highly engaged with everyone in the entire arts sector across the nation. I mean, the entire arts sector across the nation is shut down. And so we've been talking to our colleagues in the Broadway world, in the presented concerts, in national tours. We've been talking to other symphonies and other theater companies. I'm on multiple webinars each week, just talking with other theater colleagues about what are false, you know, like, well, when are you planning on reopening? How are you planning on reopening? You know, are you planning on removing seats? How do you plan on avoiding crowding? Are you doing concessions? Are you requiring masks? Are there capacity restrictions? How are you staying afloat financially? And there are definitely trends that are starting to emerge. I can't say best practices because no one's practiced anything. So we're all just kind of making it up as we go along. But there are good ideas that are beginning to surface. And I'm hopeful that by the time we get into the fall, we will have figured out those best practices, the best things that we can do to relaunch our programming, and that we can convince our various community leaders to let us do that, you know, because the regulatory environment, of course, that's always a challenge. But if we can assure them that we will be keeping our patrons safe, then we can start the process of convincing our patrons that they will be safe coming to us.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, watching your Shakespeare and Chill productions, I was just thinking, there are probably some people here who got flooded out of their homes. There are probably people here who've been out of work for a long time. I was just amazed that you were able to find actors who could find it in themselves to keep on doing this.
Yeah. I mean, I have some folks who are there with me every single week. I've got about four or five actors who've done all 17 weeks in a row. We have folks that float in and out, you know, and, you know, during the weeks around the flood, it was tough, you know, to decide whether we were going to move forward or not, whether we felt that it was appropriate. And we just make sure that we were talking with everybody. And we felt that what we would be able to do is provide, you know, just a late night diversion. But it also brought us together to be able to talk about it, you know? So it's not like we're pretending that these things haven't happened, you know? Like, you know, I think the flooding happened, you know, the most of it happened on like a Tuesday, Wednesday. And that Friday in our performance, you know, we sat in that space for a couple of minutes and talked about it and sent our thoughts and prayers out to the folks who were just digging themselves out. And it's also been a nice way to connect people and encourage people to give and let them know what resources are available for help if they needed help with abatement or if they wanted to know where to donate or where they could volunteer. We've been able to share that as well on the live stream.
Do you have a favorite of the shows so far?
Yeah. I mean, every week is fantastic and it's always new. But for me, it's about the unexpected ones. I've worked on about, you know, maybe two-thirds of the plays at some point in my career. But there's lots that you never get a chance to come across. Timon of Athens, you know, is a play that just people don't do. And I think if I could say two, I would say first one would be Timon of Athens, because it's an unusually straightforward plot for Shakespeare.
That is the last play I expected you to mention.
Well, it just doesn't get any bandwidth. It doesn't get any attention.
There hasn't been a Franco Zeffirelli adaptation of Timon of Athens.
That is true. But the thing that's interesting about it is that it's a very clear collaboration with another playwright. And it's a playwright who's much younger. And you can really sense the different voices. In a lot of ways, it's a lot more rough around the edges because it really is a conversation between two talented playwrights with very different voices. And it's really, really interesting in that way. Although I would say, in terms of just straightforward, just admiration for the man himself, I really enjoyed Richard III. It's just breathtakingly sinister and unnerving and beautiful. It's just a fabulous. It is as good as, you know, any violent political thriller you might find on Netflix.
Well, Dexter, thank you so much for talking to us about the series, and we can't wait to see what you're coming up with.
Oh, well, hey, thanks a lot.
Dexter Brigham is Director of Theater Programs for the Midland Center for the Arts.